Ars Zephyri is proudly hosted by Red Nation Online. We can be found on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and everywhere else you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 57 of Ours is the Fury. Finally, with your usual crew back reunited. Here with you today is Tim.
Hey.
And Ryan.
Hello.
And your host, John. So, Harper is no longer the Prime Minister of Canada. So, we're hoping that our new Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, will visit us at a soccer match, because the old Prime Minister never made it.
That's true, eh? He was always at the Red Blacks games and never came to a Fury game.
I watched a Star Wars trailer.
Yes, the only thing Blogsmith is talking about today in this giant change that occurred to this country is that he already has tickets booked for the Star Wars movie coming out on December 18th, is it?
Big news, yeah.
Yeah.
December
17th.
Midnight showing?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
Are you going to like put yourself into like a Darth Vader costume?
No. I already have trouble sitting in my seat as is.
Okay. Well, we have another win, this time against San Antonio Scorpions.
Another one?
So they weren't bottom of the league when we were about to, like, when we last discussed them, when we previewed the game, but they were bottom of the league after Indy beat Minnesota, right?
Yes. Yeah, San Antonio, coming into this game, were last place, actually.
Yeah, but last week when we talked, or when you guys discussed
them,
they were
second last.
Because that was the best thing that has happened to the Fury this weekend, besides our win, was that Indy beat Minnesota 3-1.
Yeah, and Minnesota didn't look like they were trying at all.
Like, no, I don't know what they're thinking. Anyway, we'll probably discuss that in more detail in when we go through all the other results and stuff, so shame on me for bringing that up. So how do we line up? Alves, Falvey, Trafford, Richter in the back, Pizer in goal. Then we did have some changes in the midfield because Richie Ryan was still out injured.
And still will be out injured.
Yeah, I talked to him. He said there's no way he's going to play against Jacksonville on Wednesday because it's too soon. And then against Atlanta, he's hoping to maybe play like the final couple minutes kind of thing.
Was he on the plane today to Jacksonville?
I don't see why he would travel.
But if he's playing in Atlanta on Saturday, just be easier.
No, we're off next weekend. Wow. We have a bye, and then the game's the week after. So they're not staying around or anything.
Flying back
into the cold fall weather. And then Mauro Eustáquio is back from the U23 qualifiers. Mm-hmm. Canada had a good run, but finally they lost against the U.S. And that's it for them, right?
Yeah, it's over.
And then Ubi was also in there in the midfield. And then we have Paulo Jr. on the left wing and Andrew Wiedemann on the right wing. And Tommy Heinemann is our sole striker. How do you guys see the game?
From the stands. It was chilly.
Yeah, but good crowd considering the temperature. It was 3 degrees at kickoff?
Yeah, it was snowing during the day.
Which is about 36 Fahrenheit, if anyone's listening from down south.
Well, the San Antonio players certainly were cold. I mean, some of them had like the kind of equipment that we would wear in the blizzard. Well,
when I was in junior high, we'd do this thing where we'd go camping for a week in the mountains in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of like survival training. And you'd have like the parkas and your face would be completely covered. And it'd be like minus 30. And that's what the San Antonio players look like on the bench.
So, what was the exact number for the attendance? Was it like 5,000 something?
5,023 or 33 or something like that.
Yeah, that's a number I'm really happy with. I mean, Ryan and I were kind of talking before the pod how we really have that base of like 4,000 to 5,000 hardcore Fury fans. Like, these guys are showing up for every game now. Now we just need to branch out and get that, you know, get it to the next level. Like,
yeah, Monsieur Plante works for Le Droit local newspaper. He tweeted out the exact numbers for the season,
mm-hmm.
and it was over 77,000 total,
mm-hmm.
and an average of over 55 or 5,400. It's retweeted on our Twitter feed. You can check it at OIT Fury. And it's quite a good number, a 25% increase year on year.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, the match itself was pretty good as well. A lot of chances on both ends. It was really the two keepers outperforming each other. Rommel Pizer saved us time and time again, as he does pretty much every match if we allow chances.
That one save was amazing. He jumped. It was going in the corner. He jumped, arms full out, punched it away.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the first half.
Yeah, and then Daniel Fernandez, who's actually Canadian. He has, I believe, Portuguese roots. And yes. Canada soccer, typical, the way that they are, just never bothered to tell him that they're interested in having him play for the country. And basically, you know, he said, you know, I want to play. And then eventually Portugal got ahead and he ended up playing for them instead.
Oh, was he capped by Portugal?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
some of the crowd was on him. And I was wondering why that was, and I guess that's why.
Yeah, I don't have any hard feelings towards him because he reached out to Canada first, but CSA kind of fell asleep.
I think that's like how the CSA used to be. I think it's changed now. Like in the last year or two, they seem to be capping players left, right, and
center. Oh, yeah, especially lately with Fraser Aird, Junior Hoylett, all these players. But for that kind of stuff, check out @Canucks_abroad.
Ooh, look at how you slipped that in.
Yeah, and there's also a Canucks Abroad segment on the Two Solitudes podcast that I do every month or so.
Now you're pushing it.
Okay, well, back to the Fury. Tommy Heinemann is some player I want to point out. He didn't score this game, but I thought he worked like his ass off. Like he and everything besides scoring worked out for him. Like he just made good passes. He like there were so many situations where he tracked back and helped out in the defense and got us the possession back. I just want to throw that out there before I forget that I was really impressed with Tommy.
Yeah, played well. Should have had that goal in the first half when he was kind of 1-on-1 with the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did actually score, but it was called back for the foul.
Yeah, so that was like I think off a free kick where Ryan Richter fouled someone in the box and then Tommy's header, perfect header, didn't count. That was annoying in the stands because we thought it was an offside call and we're like, it's not offside!
I know, I saw the replay like right after and it definitely was a foul. I don't know if it didn't stop the goal from happening, you know, it wasn't like directly.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. But, I mean, the players didn't complain, so that usually means that it was legit.
But the referee didn't seem to call much, like, so he was letting like everything go, especially in the first half. And then towards the end of the game, it's like if you, I don't know, if you turned your head the wrong way or made like the slightest
so
of tackles.
Before we get into the incident,
there was
before we get into what we all want to talk incident? About. Yeah,
the amazing goal.
Well, yeah, that too. Let's talk about that kind of stuff first before we talk about the incident. Mauro, yeah, what an incredible job. How confident he is on the ball now.
Yeah, beautiful goal. Beautiful goal.
Just watching this player develop, it's been a really big joy. And I was talking before the show with John, and we're talking about just the way he holds the ball, the way he protects the ball, and the kind of plays he's making. You can tell he's being influenced by some of the older players, like the Richie Ryans, the Julian de Guzmans on the team. You can see that's coming out now.
Yeah, he's better than de Guzman going forward already, I think. Because de Guzman doesn't do that much going forward and Mauro is not afraid to go up there and dribble through one or two players and make a risky pass. But that flick on by de Guzman to Mauro was just such a beauty.
Can you like someone needs to make a GIF of that and then like make it like a digital frame and I could just put that up in my living room.
Also, before the goal, it was actually a San Antonio possession and someone just like slid in and gave that ball to de Guzman who flicked it on. But
it was,
I could
Ubi.
Was that Ubi? Because that was also brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it just exemplifies how every player on the field, no matter his position, like defends, no matter where they are. Like as soon as we lose the ball, you know, there's a switch that goes off in their head. They're like, gotta get that ball back. And yeah, that was a perfect example of that. Anything else before we discuss the incident?
No, let's get into it.
Okay, so in the 73rd minute, our friend Eric Hasley got subbed on. For those of you who don't know, he has a bit of a history, a bit of a reputation. Ryan, maybe you're the best to explain who this Eric Hasley fellow is.
He is a French soccer superstar who came over to... most North American soccer fans know him because he played in the very first ever Vancouver Whitecaps game. And he scored a goal. And he was already on a yellow. And he took his shirt off. But it was okay. Because he had a shirt underneath his shirt. Like another jersey under his jersey. And he still got a card, his second yellow, and was sent off. Amazing striker, was up for FIFA Goal of the Year at one time for a goal against the Seattle Sounders. Look that up, Whitecaps Sounders Hasley goal. It's beautiful. Spent some time with FC Dallas, Toronto FC, and it hasn't been going as well for him. I think it's maybe discipline problems, a bit of fitness issues.
Yeah, he's a freaking monster.
He's a beast. He's a player that I used to fear. And I still fear. Like, when he was subbed on, I was like, oh, he better not score.
And just if you've never seen him, he kind of looks like a bouncer. Like, he's someone, if you would, like, meet him in a dark alley at night, like, you'd run away or pee your pants. Like, he's actually really intimidating looking. And I don't think it helps his case. Because soccer isn't the kind of game where you want to, like, be perceived like that.
Yeah, no, and he's definitely a target for referees. And I honestly think this incident, I don't think it was a red card.
No, it wasn't. So, yeah, he did get a red card. It was down by the Fury corner. It was Falvey who had the ball. Hasley started sliding towards him. And then Falvey went down as if he was shot by a sniper rifle and then really sold the foul. And you know what? It can be argued that actually that it wouldn't even been a yellow, really. Like, it's...
He was just playing aggressive.
Yeah, I think yellow, maybe not, depending on the referee. I think definitely got it by reputation.
Yeah.
Like, it was late, it wasn't super late. I guess he went studs up, but he didn't go through Falvey. He kind of went.
But the first play of the game, I know he was offside, but he also had his elbow up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he just makes a bad impression.
But also, his technique is remarkable. Like, he doesn't look like someone that could, like, dribble through a bunch of players and have that type of control. But he does. Like, he really is an excellent soccer player.
Yeah, he could score from half. But, like, it's just discipline issues and fitness issues now. And, like, I don't know, like, what's changed in the last 5 years. But he's really declined in those two areas. And, like, players at the professional level need to be well-rounded.
Well, I was talking to one San Antonio fan on social media, and he was saying the best thing to come out of this is that he's going to be suspended for the next game so he can't play. So their own fans are fed up with him.
Well, he gets a red every third game or second game. Like, it's pretty bad. Well,
we keep on saying that on the podcast. You know, it's not a San Antonio game if no one gets sent off. Kind of sad not to see Adrian Can or Nana Atakora subbed on.
Yeah, I was really hoping to see, especially Adrian Can, a player with a long history in Canada. Atakora, too, playing.
Plus, you know, this might be the last season, right, for Adrian?
Maybe. We might see him. We might see him somewhere else, too. We don't know the future of San Antonio. That's another club that, you know, might be the last time we see this team in Ottawa. That's still up in the air. Might be purchased by the Spurs and moved into another league. So.
Yep. But yeah, that was a great result for the Fury. We'll look at the standings later on. I think it's time to take our usual break, and then we'll get back to you with some Fury news, NASL news, listener questions, and all that good stuff.
Listening to Ours is the Fury, your number one source for all things Ottawa Fury FC.
Welcome back, guys. So, Tim, tell us what's new with the academies.
All right, the academy went to Blainville and lost, unfortunately. Last game of the season. Really good ending. They finished fifth out of 7. So they finished ahead of Les Homme Chant and Gatineau.
So they both lost. those two teams must have also lost, right?
Yeah, I see. So, yeah, so good. Like, they were last pretty much the whole season, and you get on them. No more academy news for the rest of the year. So, you know, congrats to Phil Santos and Darko Buser and everybody else and all the players for a good year, a good exciting year, and hope to see you guys back next year. And
yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we might see Darko Buser in a different role. We've been hearing a little bit of chatter that there might be an internal solution to the new coach. Some people are saying that maybe it'll be Nash. Some people are saying, why not Darko Buser? Because if you look at his resume, he has every coaching license imaginable and so on. We'll see. Other Ottawa news. We have a pretty good source that has told us that Pizer will extend his contract by an additional 2 years, and that will be announced very soon, which is absolutely fantastic news if true. But, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's not official.
I think now would be the time that it'd be the best time to bargain for a contract, especially if you're a player like Elvis or Pizer or Falvey, right? Like, now would be the time to speak up a couple weeks before the championship.
Well, I joked with DeSantos after the game and I was like, don't take any of our players to Kansas. And he's like, we'll see. And then I was like, not even Mauro.
Wait, he didn't say, what do you mean Kansas?
No.
Did he mention anything? Did he correct you about Kansas?
No. You just said, we'll see.
And you said Kansas?
Yeah.
That's pretty much confirmation then.
Yeah, not quite.
No. You heard it here first.
No. Well, Kansas City is technically in Missouri, so.
Okay. Right, I got you.
I don't get it.
Well, not Kansas the state and Kansas City is in Missouri. There's Kansas City, Kansas too, though.
Yeah, on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys really know your
US yeah. There's welcome to geography. Geography now with Blogsmith.
Oh yeah, I just want to mention, like, it was kind of neat last game how everybody just like walked on the pitch. Like, it wasn't a pitch invasion, but everyone sort of casually walked on the pitch, and the players stuck around and. We just talk to everybody, and it's just so fun how approachable this club is. I mean, a professional soccer club where you can, like, be buddy-buddy with the players, like, what's not to like?
I think they've done a really great job at catering to the fans they have. I think they do very well reaching out, including the fans. They always have the youth teams at the start of the game, the Fury Fanatics program. I don't think they get enough credit for things like that. And I think they've been doing a very good job. And it shows in the attendance numbers, you know, the 25% increase year on year. And I'm sure we'll see bigger numbers next year, too. I don't see it going down. I only see it going up.
Yeah, and, like, the kids are loving it. They're getting selfies and autographs, and they're just, like, in heaven.
Yeah, it's building. And, you know, Montreal took, you know, a good 10, 15 years to build to where they are. And, like I was saying earlier today, I used to go to Whitecaps games and be 4,000 people there, and we're already past that mark. And the Whitecaps are like 20 years old at that time. So.
And Martin Burt tweeted in and said he thought that the Fury did a great job of recognizing fans and supporter groups on Sunday, and that he can't wait for the home playoff game. And he's right. Like, it was a really nice touch for the players to warm up in Bytown Boys and Stoney Monday Riot shirts. And
yeah, it was a very nice touch. And it's maybe something they could extend next season to local clubs or like other causes in the community.
And so let's look at some other tweets that we received this week, just for general tweets towards us. What's our first one, Tim?
OIT question bot. Question for this week's pod: is Eric Hasley full of chocolate?
He's asking us if Hasley is full of chocolate.
Does that mean he's so full of chocolate his eyes are brown?
Or is he so full of chocolate that he's like pudgy? So fills himself with chocolate.
I know, I thought we covered Hasley pretty good, but I actually kind of felt bad for him when I got home. I really did.
Yeah, he's just fallen.
Didn't he wave to you before he came up?
Yeah, I was yelling, Eric, I love you, Eric, I love you.
And he waved, yeah.
And he clapped his hands and waved and pointed at me, yeah. And maybe he thinks I'm actually in love with him, but it's not the case.
And Craig, who is at Irish Fury SG, says, Eddie's winless and four straight at end of season. Is Edmonton's remoteness a factor regarding travel fatigue compared to Midwest and Eastern teams? I think it definitely plays a role. Like, you can't dismiss that. They do have the most travel out of anyone. I mean, Minnesota is in a similar boat, but
yeah, since they're already in the U.S. Too. Like, Edmonton has no direct flights. We have no direct flights. But
yeah, but imagine when the Islanders, or whatever they're called now, the Puerto Rico, what are they called, FC?
No, it's Puerto Rico FC, PRFC, yeah.
Yeah, when they join, like, that trip from Edmonton is, like, basically, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, just wait till Honolulu FC joins.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a two-way street, though, that they are so far away that they have to travel, but other teams visiting have to travel. Really
yeah,
far.
But that's one or two games a season, right? For them, it's like every away match. I think it does play a role, but I don't think it's an excuse for their performances lately. I've watched probably last four or five FC Edmonton matches, and they have been so lackluster, and they have been so useless with Lance Lang away with Jamaica, like and then injured. Like, it's actually kind of sad to see, because I was hoping that they would be in the top four, you know, because they're our Canadian cousins and so on. But that week where they had three away matches in a row, where travel isn't really an excuse because they're just hopping from one place to the next, and, you know, other teams have done this successfully. Like, the Fury have gotten, what, like, I think 5 wins and a draw from their two 1 week away trips.
But how many more hours are they in the air than us? Not really that much, right? Because we always fly to Toronto, then DC, and then go wherever we're going. That's how they usually do it.
Well, you're kind of from there, so I don't know how far it is. It looks far on a map.
Yeah, the curvature of the earth and the jet streams. No, it's not. It's like maybe they travel like 3 more hours a week than us. You know,
I think it plays a role, definitely. Like, remember when we had
6 hours
Martin Nash on, and he talked about his USL playing days, and he said, yeah, well, so, we've always won the league with Charlton Battery because we had the least travel.
Yeah, and that was a bus league. They actually took, like, Greyhound-style buses, like team buses.
Yeah.
To games like Rochester, to Charleston, to, yeah, all over Richmond, Virginia. So, yeah, that... I could see that playing a factor, but and commercial flights not the funnest, I imagine. So.
Okay, and then we have another question from OIT Question Bot, who wants to know if the Scorpions are the most trash side we've seen visit TD plays.
Ouch.
Does he mean trash in terms of like their poor discipline and the way they carry themselves, or like in terms of playing level?
I imagine it's their
both.
It's the former.
But what's going on with this team? Like, they were cream of the crop last year. They won the league last year.
Maybe it's because they have a mole in their dressing room that gives away their team secrets.
That is huge news, and that's serious news. And we might do an episode later on after the season about some of the more political stuff involving the NASL. But there was a player, and I'm sorry I don't have his name off the top of my head, but apparently a player for the San Antonio Scorpions, who's suspended now, was calling or giving information about their starting lineup and formations to opposition team. Was it opposite?
Yeah.
Wouldn't they be guilty too, though, the opposition team coaches? Aren't they held accountable in this too?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of information they have, but if the club suspends a player, they have to have something substantial on that player. There's no way they're going to do that because they suspect something.
Right, and long-time listener Namu, I believe it was him that said this league is a lot shadier than a lot of people. Or was it Keaton? Maybe it was Keaton. Keaton Robbins. He was saying this league is a lot shadier than most people recognize. And I think I still think there's elements of that in the league.
I mean, we're originating from a traffic source. Like, need I say more? You know.
Yeah, and if listeners don't know what we're talking about, take some time and just traffic sports FIFA scandal, do some background reading, and we're gonna have more on that probably in a few weeks, and we're gonna talk to some people about it, so should be interesting.
And then we also had a question from Older Goaler, who, by the way, organizes a supporters soccer league in the Ottawa Fury Sevens. So if you want to play some 7-on-7 with fellow Fury supporters. Check that out. Tim and I are on that league. We're both superstars. Mm. So, that's actually quite a scene to watch us play soccer. I bet. But yeah, what did he ask, Ryan?
He said top three things the club can do to continue the rise in attendance to next season. Top three things the supporters can do to continue the rise into next season. Wow, did anyone come up with three things or do their homework?
The first thing would be keep doing what you're doing, like the positive things that we have noted, you know, establishing all these links in the community.
The winning team has been a big bonus.
Yeah, that would be my second point. You know, keep doing what you're doing on the pitch, be a winning team. And then thirdly, increase marketing or have some marketing.
You're still on about that marketing.
Yeah, I think a big one coming up that they have to kind of wrestle with, I believe, in the offseason is what do they do now that it's getting bigger than the lower South Bowl? How do they want to proceed? Do they want to proceed to the Southern South? Do they want to keep that open? Waiting for tickets to be sold and then opening it up is probably going to backfire on you eventually. So I think they need to kind of come up with that plan.
I think optic-wise, it looks good when there's people on both sides, even if it's the lower part. Even if it's half the seats are empty, because it is a 24,000-seat stadium, and nobody in this league gets over 10,000. I think optic-wise, you need people on both sides.
Well, and turn the freaking camera around. Like, have the...
But when they built the stadium, they put all the media stuff on one side.
Yeah, but how hard is it to run a bunch of cables?
No, it's a logistical nightmare.
But yeah. Isn't the Red Blacks games, like, they have camera angles from everywhere and cameras flying all over the place, no?
Oh, yeah, they have, like, drones and they shoot fireworks out of the top of the stadium. They go all out, yeah, for sure.
They had a
CF-18 fly over the stadium at the start of a game. And
well, this is all going to change with Justin Trudeau in power.
Has nothing to do with our football team.
Just had to drop that in there. Another question from OIT Question Bot, who's on a roll here. That's his third question. That's your final question, BBC SC _ Curtin.
Well, it is a bot, but yeah.
Yeah. What does he want to know?
Go ahead, Tim. All right. Can't read.
Thoughts on one-man broadcasts. Soccer seems to need a color man less than most sports, yet North American teams insist on shoehorning one in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is my favorite question this week.
There are instances where it works. Like, for example, on Bean TV, when you have Phil Schoen and Ray Hudson together, I like those guys.
You love that?
Oh. When I'm in the mood for it. Ray Hudson, you got to be in the mood for it. But generally, I like the more traditional one man. And you know what? Sometimes not hearing a commentator is better than having one. Like, good commentators will leave some dead air. And, like, you want to hear the fans. You just want to, like, take in the game sometimes. And our Rogers TV commentators, and to be fair, it wasn't the regular ones I heard at the last match. And I have no idea how they did because I was at the stadium. But I find they're just talking all the time. Like, it's nonstop, and it's distracting, and I often mute it.
Yeah, and in North America, it's really weird. Like, especially MLS in the States, they'll always have, like, the local guy that knows nothing about soccer, and then they'll have, like, the British guy for, like, credibility or something.
Well, that works in, like, sports that are really weird. Like, I see that done in Canada. Like, when you watch, like, the Summer Olympics or something, and there's, like, some weird-ass discipline. There's, like, one knowledgeable guy with not a lot of media experience saying, like, well, now he's lifting this weight, blah, blah, blah. And then the other commentator will sort of make it entertaining because he's in the media. But in soccer, do you need that at this point?
Yeah, I'm not against a second guy in there, but I am really for a minimalist kind of experience. Take to games. You don't need to, like John said, you don't need to talk through the whole game. You don't have to explain everything. You don't have to explain in detail what the viewer can actually see.
Yeah, it's not that, the radio. That's for radio.
That goes through, people on TV do that all the time. And it's not even just soccer. People are explaining what's going on that they can actually see. I can't stand it. I mean, just, you know, you don't have to talk all the time. Just
keep it minimal. Keep the color guy's comment should be, you know, tactical or interesting. It doesn't have to be about everything. It doesn't have to explain everything.
Yeah.
Well, there was a bit of a controversy regarding our broadcasters on Twitter. Some people from, you know, the Cosmos and the San Antonio. And were saying that they were being disrespectful. What did they say? Like something about screw them or something along those lines?
Yeah, he was just making some comments how a player went down like he was shot earlier and now he's like being really physical. And he's like, come on. He was really being a partisan. Like he's really being
he'd
like...
He's
being a homer. Yeah, that's the right way to put it. And I don't like seeing that. Even if it's us being homers, like we're homers on the podcast for sure, but if we're doing play-by-play, definitely not. Someone suggested on, I think it was the NASL Reddit, that people should just do their own play-by-play over top of NASL feeds and then redistribute it over the internet.
Yeah, and there are sites that exist like that. I forgot the name, but yeah, there are sites that do that and where you can actually, let's say, the audio that you're streaming is off the video, you can go like plus minus 10 seconds or whatever to have it match exactly.
And you can then rebroadcast it. Of course, it'd be highly illegal. But like,
well, I don't know if that would be illegal if you have your own audio feed. You can just mute the main one.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're just broadcasting an audio feed.
Yeah.
No, you're not rebroadcasting the video. That's very interesting. One of my favorite, and I want everyone to tweet us and tell us who your favorite broadcasters are for football. Mine's Nigel Reed. You don't really see him much.
Oh man, I hate him.
I know. We talked about this. You hate him and I love him.
He's so biased against Germans.
Ah, well, he is English, so. And that's why I sit in between you and Tim. So. But his broadcasting is something like this. If he was doing a Fury game, he's like, Felvey up to DeGuzman. DeGuzman holds. Up to Heinemann. Heinemann brings it down. Oh. And it's just like, it's just calm. And it's like, and you just listen to it. And it's nice. But yeah.
Yeah, good questions this week, OIT question bot. Keep them coming. And then finally, Matthew Hawkins, who's at mhawkin2, asks, how did the supporters allow the media back into the game?
So you're talking about the game before the game.
Oh, right, of course. On Sunday morning, the supporters played against media. It was 12-on-12. Bruce Gobelar was in goal. Martin Nash.
Well, who's this Kevin?
The younger brother of the two. He's the Canadian Messi. Anyway, he played with us supporters. We were winning 2-0. Actually scored the first goal against Bruce Gobelar. I'll never forget that.
You scored against Bruce Gobelar.
Yeah. And then they made it 2-1. And actually, then I had a free kick, which I placed perfectly on the head of Nash, who finished it like outside of the box with the header. It was crazy. And then they actually, the media won the game. No, they tied it.
No one cares, John.
Yeah, everybody cares. The media, they had one really good guy. He converted a direct corner kick.
Oh, wow.
And then it went to penalties, and actually Matt missed a penalty, hit the crossbar. Now, he does claim that it went off the crossbar and behind the line, but it was clearly ahead of the line.
Did you guys have goal line technology set up at the game?
Unfortunately not, which, you know, is a huge point of contention. Also, the Bytown Boy president missed a penalty.
Andrew.
Yeah.
So Andrew and Matt missed penalties.
Yes.
That's it. There you go.
So yeah, let's go back to Fury stuff. This week we had a question, I'm pretty sure Tim made this one up. What did you ask our listeners?
I asked, what would you personally give up / sacrifice in order for the Fury to win the soccer ball at home?
Well, Matt Bafia, who's at Matt Bafia. Okay.
That's good. That's good Twitter name.
Way to be consistent. He says, I would give up the new Star Wars movie.
Whoa, Tim.
So we know Tim wouldn't do that. Well, there's no refund on these tickets, so there's no way he's doing that.
You would give up the new Star Wars movie? Yeah, for soccer ball at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Because like, you get on DVD.
Okay, I have to admit something right here, live. I haven't seen the original trilogy still.
Wow.
Well, thank you for joining us this week. You haven't seen Star Wars?
Well, I've seen like parts when it was on somewhere, but I've never like watched like a whole film.
John always surprises me. There's always things he doesn't know what they are. And I'm like, oh, that's because he's new to Canada and things. And
this is, but Star Wars. This is what they should be asking people coming into Canada.
Like, well, the
have
thing
you
is,
seen Star Wars? No, like, back that way.
Well, yeah. In Germany, Star Wars just didn't fly because we just all thought that Darth Vader was a good guy.
It's the greatest tragedy in German film history.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
so.
Like, why is the son so ungrateful?
Moving on. So, OIT question bot, which I think is actually a bot. I don't think it's a person. I think it's a bot. He says nothing. He's just that confident in these guys.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then Matthew Hawkins says, I'd sacrifice my warmth on a cold November afternoon. And it looks like it might,
yeah,
might come to that.
I was talking to some people who follow the Minnesota team very closely, and they're like, yeah, we don't want to go to Ottawa in November. And I'm like, you live in Minnesota. It's the same thing. It's the exact same weather. Yeah, older goaler, he says, all the other bowls, soup, cereal, especially those stupid square ones. What makes a square bowl? That's a dish. What was the question again?
Yeah, that's definitely an answer.
That is an answer.
And Martin Burt answered, already given up a chance to take my kids to a scout sleepover at Scotiabank Place, or CTC, Canadian Tire Center, following the Sens game on November 14th. Also gave up cheaper tickets at a better flight times for a trip to Havana. Booked it November 9th to 13th to avoid Ottawa Fury playoff dates.
He's a real fan.
He is. And our best listener.
Wow. He is. And he actually emailed us this week. And I'd like to read his email. So the subject line of his email is episode 55, complaint.
Oh, so, what did you say, John? What did you do?
So when I read the subject line, my heart sank. I was like, what kind of complaint could our favorite listener possibly make? So I'm going to read it to you guys. So he says, Dear Ours is the Fury podcast, in episode 55 at minute 608, John made a statement about the Fury always playing away from the fans in the second half. I'd like to point out that there are many Fury fans that sit at the end of the stadium that the Fury player play towards in that half. I consider myself a knowledgeable, passionate Fury fan, and I sit in section Q, which is in the end that the Fury play towards in the second half. While it's true that the Fury were playing away from the supporters in section W in that half, I would argue that half of the Ottawa Fury fans in attendance at that game were at the end the Fury were attacking. For example, everyone in sections K, L, M, N, P, Q, and R, for example, as well as club seats C101 to 105. While I appreciate the supporters group provide a fantastic atmosphere and support to the team, to suggest that they're the only fans does a disservice to the many fans and supporters that attend and cheer for the Fury in section other than W. Keep up the good work and come on, you Fury. Okay, Martin, I do have to apologize for my statement. I should have said, away from the supporter section. And you're right. Sometimes I live in this little bubble and I forget
it's true
that there's... They can't see you nodding, right? I sometimes forget that, there's 4,000 or 5,000 other fans besides the supporters who also pay for season tickets and probably pay more than me for their season tickets and, probably have more responsibilities than I do and have more sacrifices to go to these games. And if the Fury decide to play into their direction, then that's fine. So, yeah, I should have been more clear about it. I was annoyed that they always seem to be playing away from the supporter section in the second half. And the same thing happened actually again on the last week. But, if that's what it takes for them to win the league, that's fine with me. So thank you, Martin, for your comment. We certainly appreciate it. So we do have one final tweet remaining for the week, and that comes from Tajik.
And he answers, I would sacrifice the last beer in my fridge, my Lord of the Rings DVD collection, and my day at work.
Well, a day at work, yeah.
I'd give up all my days of work.
Wow. So we have Star Wars fans, Lord of the Rings fans. Ours is the Fury. I think it's a reference to Game of Thrones. We're a bunch of nerds. Yeah. That's right. Awesome, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, good response rate this week. Thanks, guys, for engaging with us. And do leave us an iTunes review. Even if you don't listen to us on iTunes, it really helps us. It's kind of our bread. Does that make sense?
Bread and butter.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's Ryan's favorite segment.
It is.
Anyway, we should take a break, and then we'll get into NASL-related news results, and we'll preview the next game against Jacksonville.
You're listening to the Hours as a Fury podcast. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
Welcome back to the final segment of Our Sister Fury. So let's look at some news. Interesting news from Florida this week. Tampa Bay Rowdies defender Willie Reed charged with possession of coke and released by the team.
I just had a Pepsi.
Yeah, I think it's different kind of coke.
Okay. Like Coke Classic. Coke Zero.
Vanilla Coke,
I think. Vanilla Coke. Yeah, they have that in the States.
Yeah,
there's mugshots and everything on the web. It's
so the question I think everyone comes to mind when they read or hear this is, how does an NASL player afford blow?
Yeah.
Well, it's Florida. I'm sure there's more supply.
They're closer, to the
Colombians.
The source, yeah. All the ships coming in down at the harbor. All right. USL president Jake Edwards has said that they are seeking Division II sanctioning for the 2017 season. And are in the process of doing that now. Sorry, Mr. Edwards, but I really think you're not the legitimate Division II league here, because you have teams like the LA Galaxy 2 in the final, a reserve team, which to me shouldn't be in
In Europe, isn't there like Barcelona 2 and like?
Yeah, but like in Germany, for example, reserve teams can't go higher than the third division.
Okay.
So you can never have basically the first team and the second team right next to each other. So even if, like, this is getting technical, but if the first Bundesliga team gets relegated to the second Bundesliga, you can't have one in the third. It has to be in the fourth.
Right.
Just because, gets relegated or promoted, they're all of a sudden in the same league, right?
Right.
Although you don't have that problem in North America. But, yeah, I did watch the Rochester Rhino versus LA Galaxy 2 final. Was in Rochester. Looked like pretty shitty weather. It was really cold, rainy.
I think there was more people at the Fury Rochester game we went to 2 years ago.
Anyway, I like the Rochester Rhinos.
I love that club.
I wish they would join the NASL, but yeah, we shouldn't feel too threatened about this Division II sanctioning. I mean, it's just a name. Like, whether you have Division II or Division III in the name, I don't think it matters that much to sponsors, right? All that matters is like how many people are coming to your game, basically.
I've said it over and over. I don't understand why, without promotion and relegation, why we even bother having Division 1, Division 2. Like, why do we even call it? If there's no promotion and relegation, it doesn't matter. Like, it's...
They're separate entities,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like AAA baseball, Major League Baseball, whatever. It's like...
Yeah. New York Cosmos legend... Well, soccer legend Raul announces retirement. It's time. It really is time. He was a fantastic player for a long time. He was the leading Champions League scorer before, I think it was Messi or Ronaldo, or maybe both surpassed him. He's won the World Cup. He's won the Euro Cup. He's won everything there is to win in world football besides maybe the Europa League. So... Shame on you, Raul. You didn't win the Europa League. No, but seriously, he's a fantastic player, but he's an old man, and it shows. Like, I think it's good that he's not trying to squeeze out another season.
He had glimpses this year. Did really well, but a couple games, you could tell he was kind of not giving 100%.
Now, the Cosmos fans are quite worried because they were hoping that he would stay on and coach the academy and stuff like that, and it looks like he might not even do that. So, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, and apparently Senna is retiring at the end of the year, too.
So. Oh, it's official about Senna?
I believe so.
Wow, yeah. That's what I was wondering, because Senna still looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He still puts the ball exactly where he wants it. He wins all the battles. So, I was really impressed with Senna a couple weeks ago. I was watching Cosmos game.
Another NASL related news is that Stefano Pino of the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, he's that player that wasn't initially a striker, but Kronsteiner just was like, you're going to play striker this season, and now he's like the best striker in the league. He has 16 goals already. Anyway, he won player of the week.
Yeah, last week. This week's not decided, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so.
Unless we forgot to check.
Speaking of player of the week and elections and voting, Eustachio's goal is up for goal of the week. So head either to the OttawaFuryFC.com or the NASL site and make sure to vote for Mao's.
And we did mention this last week. The Golden Ball, Young Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, still up for voting. So go up and vote for your favorite Ottawa candidate.
Yeah, it's kind of controversial that every team gets to submit two players for the Golden Boot.
I find it odd in a sense that teams are kind of now trying to promote one player over another one of their players.
Well, I find it odd in the sense that the last place team submits two players. Like, who are we going to vote for? Eric Hasley or Adrian Kahn? You know, like...
Is that their two choices?
No, but like, I'm just picking...
But this should be Castillo. He was amazing. Mm. All season he's been amazing. And who else on... Who's the striker on San Antonio? He's always dangerous.
Omar Cummings.
Yeah, Cummings. Him and Castillo. When I see those two doing... like they're doing the spot kicks this last game. I think they could be up... He could be up for a Golden Ball. No. But if you had to pick someone on that team, that'd be who to pick.
Well, we all know that if it was us picking, it would be Pizer, right?
Yeah, Pizer. You know, Heinemann's had a good year.
Yeah, I think it's not Come on, the best Jack. Player of the league territory yet.
Oh, well, he's top five on our team. Yeah. We're the best team.
Anyway, if he wins us the final of the soccer bowl with the hat trick, we can discuss
it. What does he have to do to win your heart, John?
No, he has already won my heart, and I've already talked about him in our review section. Anyway, let's look at how Edmonton did in Carolina at the Wednesday game. Not good. They basically threw away their postseason chances that game. Yeah, actually, they got a red card, so that made it harder. I kind of watched that game, but I had it on in the background, and yeah.
The score was 2-1. Yeah. Edmonton lost to the Railhawks.
Silverbacks against Tampa was 0-0.
Exciting.
That was a good result for SC Edmonton. So if things had actually would have gone their way a little bit, but all doesn't really matter because Fort Lauderdale Strikers beat Carolina Railhawks 4-0. And there was less than 3,000 people there.
Well, and the game was in Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, for a team kind of pretty much in the playoffs almost.
But nice. You know what they need? They need a second team in that city. Because there's just room in that market.
Or a third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it's basically... we'll look into the standings in a second and we'll get to that. But it's basically going to be Fort Lauderdale Strikers in that fourth seed unless like a miracle happens. And Stefano Pino is still competing there for the most goals against... who's the one that he's competing against? Is it Omar Cummings? Or?
Yeah, I believe so.
And then the biggest surprise result that we mentioned in the previous section was the Indy 11 3-1 win against Minnesota. And Tim, I think you watched this match, right? So maybe say a few words.
I did. Indy 11 absolutely rolled over them. Like I tweeted.
How is that possible?
They beat them 3-1. They could have easily had 6 had their finishing been... somewhat decent. Minnesota's backline just looked terrible.
They do this every year. They fall apart. Well, the 3 seasons I've watched closely, they've fallen apart at the end of the season every year.
Yeah. Who was it? The third goal scored by... I forget who.
Smart?
No.
No. He got a goal, though.
But I saw the goal. It's like from like 100 yards out or something.
Yeah, just screamer.
I heard he was on another soccer pitch.
I'm not good with the Imperial system.
Yeah, apparently Minnesota had a couple subs in the back line, and they had Ramirez playing like center mid. But still, I mean, Indy 11 just walked them.
That's good. It, you know, the fans, I think they deserve that.
They were definitely into it. Although I'm calling bullshit on the 9,085 attendance. Because I think the stadium hall is like 11, maybe not even 11.
Yeah.
The big, like, BYB stand was probably about 60% full. And the rest of the stadium was about 50% full. Wow. At best.
Maybe they're all going to the washroom.
Maybe.
Maybe it's like Toronto where, like, people are gone half the game.
But yeah, it was great for the Fury having that match on a Saturday before the Sunday game against San Antonio. And pretty much those two results pretty much gives us the fall season.
Yeah, we'll look at the exact standings in just a second. I just want to talk about the Jacksonville Armada FC against FC Edmonton match that wrapped up the weekend. Jacksonville beat our Canadian cousins 3-2. Attendance was 6,500. Now, I watched this game, you know, with specifically because I wanted to take a look at Jacksonville, who I haven't really watched much this year. Keita, the great player, he played really well. He scored the first goal for them, but he got a second yellow in the 50-ish minute, so he actually won't be playing against Ottawa, which is great for us. And then FC Edmonton turned things around temporarily, and they were leading 2-1 against 10 men, so I figured they're going to take this home, but they managed to just have an awful defensive display once again. And if you defend like that, and Colin Miller has said this even in post-match interviews, like, you're not going to win, or you're not going to take anything home from a place like Jacksonville where it's very hard to play for away teams. And yeah, they lost 3-2. They're out of the playoffs. I've mentioned it before. I think the over-reliance on Lance Lang and poor defensive discipline is what cost them in that final sprint. This Wednesday, at the same night that we'll be playing against against Jacksonville, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers are going to be playing San Antonio Scorpions. And if they get a result there, it's pretty much all over. Because if we look at the combined standings first here, we got the Fort Lauderdale Strikers with 37 points. And then the Tampa Bay Rowdies not far behind with 36, but Fort Lauderdale has a game in hand, so they still have 3 games left, and Tampa has 2 games left. We're currently leading both tables. The combined table, we're 2 points ahead of New York. We have a little bit better goal difference, too. New York Cosmos, so we have 52 points. Cosmos have 50 points. Minnesota United, 49. So top 3 seeds decided, and then most likely Fort Lauderdale Strikers next. And let's look at the fall table, because that's the most fun to look at.
Well, that's the one we have the bigger lead in, so yeah. So Ottawa Fury is sitting on top of the fall table with 52 points.
41.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong table. Wow, so yeah, we only got 11 points in the spring season. So we're number one with 41 points. Minnesota is not catching us.
No, because we have the goal difference. If you know, we have 33 goals for, 13 against. That brings us to 20.
It's plus 8, right? Like, we're 8 above Minnesota or something.
Yeah, because they have 12. If you subtract the goals against from the goals for, they have 12. So basically, in the next 2 games, they would have to be like, we'd have to lose both games.
The goal differential of 8 and not get a point.
Yeah, so they'd have, like, we'd have to, like, if we lose both games, anyway, Ryan's telling me to wrap it up.
No, well, what I'm saying, I'm just saying, like, we just need a point. We need 1 point on this road trip.
Even if we don't get the point, it's all good.
It still might be good, yeah. Everything has to go right for Minnesota. Everything has to go wrong for us with the 8 goal differential difference. So, one thing that we should be going for, though, is trying to get the soccer bowl. So the way it works, champions of the spring and fall host, and then whoever has the better record in the combined table, whoever's left after the first playoff in the championship, will host a soccer bowl. And so that's what we want.
Yeah, because who doesn't enjoy November 15th, Ottawa outside for 2 hours?
Woohoo! Sounds awesome to me.
I know.
Yeah, and it sounds like the Red Blacks are in the playoffs, so there's going to be some busy place, TD Place, this November.
Yeah, but we can't have football lines at the championship. If that happens, I'm going to riot. It's going to be stony.
Fair enough. On Monday. Fair enough. Yeah.
So let's just quickly look at the playoffs situations for all the different teams. So as you know, we're playing Jacksonville tomorrow, so that will be today by the time you listen to this, or yesterday if you listen to it late. Anyway, we have a bye after that, and we'll probably bring you another podcast, I hope, before the Atlanta game. But let's take a look at the path that the other teams that are up there have. So New York Cosmos are playing against San Antonio Scorpions away and against Tampa Bay Rowdies at home. Minnesota plays against Atlanta Silverbacks and San Antonio Scorpions, both at home.
Ooh, easy.
Yep. And Fort Lauderdale plays against the Scorpions at home, against Indy and Jacksonville Armada away. So they have three games left, as I mentioned before. And there's an outside chance that Tampa Bay can still surpass them. They play against Carolina Railwalks. Railwalks. Wow.
Ewoks.
The Ewokers. At home, and then against New York Cosmos away. So we don't want to, you know, give you a false sense of excitement towards the end of the fall season. You know, that's the job of the official NASL Twitter account. Everything's pretty much decided, I think. There might be a surprise, but...
Yeah, I think both all the four teams are decided. Just where they stack up, it'll be nice to see Ottawa get that first one. And
be nice to get Fort Lauderdale, yeah. Right?
So I think you want to avoid the Minnesota, New York, have them battle it out and then play the winner.
Yeah, it's like have the two tough guys beat each other up and then fight the tough guy half beaten up. Something that's interesting, the game coming up, I noticed that Pizer's on five yellows with that yellow.
Yeah, but they don't carry over from the spring season, so he actually has nothing to worry about. It's only Morrow who has something to worry about. I think he's on four. But then again, they don't count for the playoffs either.
So how many yellows is he on for the fall season? Because the stat sheet says five.
That's combining spring and fall. I don't know how many he got in the fall and how many in the spring. Something like 3 and 2 or something.
Let's hope they overlook whatever it is.
Yeah, it's too complicated even for their own league to figure it out. But yeah, the yellows, like even if you get your fifth yellow on the final day of the season, I think they don't count for the playoffs, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe I think it does, but...
Yeah?
I might be wrong. So we got Jacksonville. We head to Jacksonville. Wednesday, 7:30 p.m.
And if you're listening, there's going to be some watch parties. Leave the Heart and Crown's doing one. Stony Monday Riot's getting together at the Halifax Donair on Ronson Street. And the Heart and Crown one is on Preston in Little Italy.
Yep.
And check maybe, I think the Georgetown's still showing games in the back. So, but... And if you have a watch party anywhere in the city, let us know and we'll advertise it for you.
Yeah, but not for this game.
Yeah, too late.
Too late for this one.
Next one.
All right. So Jacksonville are tough to beat at home. They haven't lost there since their 0-4 loss to Carolina. And they're 8 games in a row undefeated at home. So it's no easy feat.
They've been playing really well at home. You look at them, they're like second or third last in the table. But they're just—they have a fortress at home, so.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
That's great. Yeah. That's the way it should be. If, well, they should be higher in the table, but it's good to be a winning team at home. That's great, especially for an expansion team.
Yeah, Ottawa has a 1-win-1-draw record against Jacksonville. We beat them here, and drew 0-0 away, which I believe is the last game in the spring season.
I have no recollection of that game against Jacksonville at home.
It was the only one I've not watched. It was during one of the Ottawa Women's World Cup games. And they took forever to put it on YouTube. But I had already seen the highlights of.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember.
What? I'm talking about the home game. Like the first game of the fall season. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember much of it either. Good. It was 2-0. Huh. I think Mason Trafford scored.
Huh. Yeah. And our streak, eh? We're 1 loss in the last 24 matches. Is that correct?
Our last loss was against New York Cosmos on a cold spring day in Coney Island.
No. Our last loss was against Minnesota United.
Oh, sorry. The last loss away.
BS fell. Come on.
You know, last loss away.
That free kick So they scored on last minute. If that was an inch right, we would have been hauling the fall season trophy last Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'd probably be top of the combined table by, like, even more. Three more points or...
Two more. No, three.
One more. How does soccer work?
Okay, I think it's time to wrap it up. So, anyway, they're not going to have Keita because he's suspended. I mentioned that. They usually play a 4-2-1-2-1.
Who's the Canadian on Jacksonville?
There is, like, a youth player, but yeah, he's hasn't featured.
He's not on the first team?
No.
Oh, okay.
And... But I should add him to the Canucks Abroad table. Thanks for reminding me. Tim, what do you mean by this next note?
The lollipop guild-esque height advantage.
Yeah.
Oh, the Fury. Yeah. They're really short players.
Yeah.
They're a really short team.
We'll beat them in the air, we always do.
All right, Alves, go up there in the corners.
So watch out for set pieces against Jacksonville. Yeah, we have a definitive height advantage against them.
Good.
And Jacksonville is the lowest scoring team in the fall and second lowest in combined, only behind Atlanta. So,
They need some offensive power.
If you're not Edmonton, they're not scoring against you.
But anyway, Jacksonville is not really a team we need to be too afraid of. They are the lowest scoring team in the fall, even though they are a fortress at home. But yeah, we're going to sink the Armada again, aren't we?
They go about a big dish. I think the fall season's a big dish. I could be wrong.
I think it's like a salad bowl.
But it will be traveling to Atlanta in case we do get that point. So we might be seeing some hardware being lifted up.
Nice.
Yeah, so let's hope that happens. And you can reach out to us on Twitter at OITFury. We have a Facebook account. Just search for Ours is the Fury. And we have an email.
Yes, oursisthefurypodcast@gmail.com.
And please leave us an iTunes review.
Please.
Till next time.
Toodles. Make your move while there's still time.
The name of any of the top scorers.
Okay, I think I really screwed up.
His favorite Star Wars character is Jar Jar.
Okay, I think I really screwed up.
Can't pronounce the word Edmonton.
Okay, I think I really screwed up.
He keeps asking you questions you have no idea what the answer is.
Pretty hard to think about things I don't do well, hey?